is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good evening, Bahamas, and welcome to another exciting edition of Nailed It on Guardian 96.9 FM. My name, of course, is Leonard Sands.
And my name, of course, is Debbie Deal.
Yes, yes. And we are very pleased to have some professionals in the safety environment in the studio today. Before we let them introduce themselves and tell us all about the wonderful things that they're doing in safety, I think is it in special? Is it Safety Week this week or last week? Or
no, it's World Day of Safety and Work next week, April 28th.
Good. So, yes. Okay, listening audience, April 28th is World Day of Safety in the Workplace.
Yes.
And we're going to have to figure out a way to do something special across all construction sites that we could highlight at least one thing that we could do safer than we did the day before.
Yes.
Just to kind of bring it home to our local community as we celebrate with the international community. And of course, before we get into it, it's observations by Leonard Sands and the BCA. And this is separate and apart from what our two guests are going to talk about. But I had an interesting conversation with some attorneys who are at the Bahamas Real Estate Exchange. And one of the attorneys was surprised that the Construction Contractors Act, which is the legislation that provides for the licensing of contractors, the board was not appointed yet. Mm. And they couldn't understand what that meant. And I said, yeah, it's exactly. He said, but this act is 10 years, almost 10 years old. Mm-hmm. I said, yeah.
On the 6th of May.
Yeah. And the board has still not been appointed yet. And so then they asked, well, so how do I get a client of mine a license? I said, well, you don't. So they said, not me. They say, so you want me to advise my client to do something illegally, which I won't advise my client to do. I say, I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just telling you what you can't get. And I'm telling you if your client is engaging in construction without said license, they are doing something illegal. Mm. Now, how you mitigate that situation, that on you. I'm just telling you what the law says, what you are doing, and we can all extrapolate that's what the situation is, okay?
Well, let me ask you a question.
So, me too. All doing illegal stuff.
So before the act was passed, it wasn't illegal to build without a license.
No, because there was no law.
Right.
You could just remember the legal premise here.
We have a law.
You cannot be found guilty before the law if the law concerning that thing does not exist.
Right. But the law exists. But
now.
But yeah.
Yes.
But we can't get licenses.
Exactly.
Yes.
So,
okay.
And so this is the interesting legal conundrum, what I said, and I presented this again several weeks ago, and I do it again. I invite some officer of the police force, some constable, lieutenant, I call the commissioner of police, to arrest me. I want to be the test case. Arrest me for a breach of the Construction Contractors Act. I can pull up the exact section which calls out, which is to perform construction without a license. There's an article number for that. Mm-hmm. I'm in breach of that. I'm fully saying that I am in breach of that article. I would like to get arrested. Go on. Now, I already going to tell my attorney, which I spoke to another attorney who reached out and said, you know what? We should try this. We should test this.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They're going to be my attorneys, and I will not call their name, but let's just say they're one of the very biggest firms in the country. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to spend a day in jail. Because my defense, then, will be my defense in all the tens of thousands of contractors are all the same defense is we would like to get a license. But you have to just show us which door, office, the board is that we could make an application for this license. Now, when you come up with that space that I could go and apply for my license that I failed to apply for, then I could be liable of an offense.
Right. And then the only other thing you can do is totally shut down the construction industry in the Bahamas. Aha. That's the only
and
other
I like
thing
that
you can
one.
Do.
So we've extrapolated. Debbie, you've hit the nail on the head.
Yep.
So if we really want to be a law-abiding society, here's what we can also do. At the end of that, say, hey, we don't want anyone to operate without a license. Everyone who is operating without a license, cease and desist.
Right. So no construction in the Bahamas.
None. Done. Yeah. Government projects stop.
Yeah, everything
Private
stops.
Sector projects stop.
Everything.
Hospital projects stop.
Everything.
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 Everything. Schools, churches, everything stops. That's the day.
Roads,
rain.
Structure, everything.
That's the day. Everything stops. We said that we believe in laws. Prime Minister said so. He's up and up and down the stages and doing his whole cupola and all the other. Oh, this is a country of laws. Yeah.
We got
this
money,
law,
but we don't abide by them.
Which is
not
affecting billions of dollars and tens of thousands of participants in it. We all are breaking the law every day. And it could be fixed simply by appointing the board so we can apply for our license again. Yeah. Now that's my
It's just them choosing their four people because we've already given them ours.
We done what we need to do. They didn't do what they need to do. They haven't done anything since. Now, and then the final thing I want to say on this. Mm-hmm. The final thing on this I want to say is finally this, before we get deep into safety, is that failure to do this for 10 years, and I'm being very honest about this, I'm full disclosure. Now, Robert is not like me, Eustacia is not my lead, and Debbie's not like me. I am the person who will dance with the devil and avoid stepping on the devil's toe. I can tell you I am. Because now I recognize that we are selective in the laws that we prosecute, it causes me to consider what laws I should follow. Mm-hmm. Now, that's me as an individual.
Right.
That's how I am. Mm. Because I can't no longer use the rule of thumb that all laws are to be followed. And if I'm doing that, it suggests to me that other right-thinking behemoths may consider that too. But maybe I don't pay my VAT. Maybe I don't apply for my business license this year. Maybe I don't, you understand me? License my car. Maybe you start to create this cascading effect of, I don't know if I should follow law.
Should I wear
That's
my seatbelt and crinkle my clothes?
I don't know.
Or
should I text and drive? I don't know. That's the slippery slope. Mm-hmm. As a society, we start to go down when we decide that there are laws that should be followed and the government itself mm-hmm. breaches that law. They signed a contract with someone who said to be a contractor to build a hospital. He can't be a contractor under the Construction Contractors Act because he does not possess a valid contractor's license. That has not yet been issued. So that is an illegal act. Okay, I ended that. So, today, and I wish they call me, police officers, I will be outside the Guardian at 6, at 7:30, waiting to be arrested. You can come in the car, or I can be escorted to the nearest police station if you like to.
Oh, there's one right down the street.
Unfortunately, my brother's officer in charge, and he probably won't arrest me. He's probably wrong. He said, brother, you coming here to hang out with me or something? No, anyway, today we have two wonderful safety professionals in the studio. We got Mr. Robert Ritchie of Bahamas Safety Solutions, and then we also have Dr.
Everybody calling me Dr. You're not? Must be prophetic.
Stacey, you're not yet? Okay.
Not yet.
Well, Dwayne, no, he can see further than most. He can see further than most.
Prompting to go and finish.
So we got Miss Eustacia Jennings, and now we're going to ask the ladies to start first and go back to you. Please introduce yourself to the public and let them know who are you in this space.
Thank you so much, Leonard, and good evening, Bahamas. It's good to be back. We were on the show back in February.
Back in February, yeah.
Myself and Bradley Joseph was with me then to talk about safety. So my name is Eustacia Jennings, and I am the principal consultant and CEO of Jennings Environmental Safety and Security Consultants,
J-E-S-S
Consultants, sidebar.
Yes, sidebar.
And also the vice president of Bahamas Association of Safety Professionals.
Awesome.
And we're just glad to be here to continue, because we didn't have enough time to talk about safety last time. We needed more time. Yeah. There's so much to be discussed, and we thought this was an opportune time to come in as we are about to celebrate World Day for Safety and Health at Work next week, Tuesday, the International Labor Organization. It's celebrated around the world. It's as a memorial to remember people who have lost their lives, but also to dedicate more time and emphasis on promoting safety in the workplace. And we'll talk more about what the theme is this year and some of the things that are happening, how we can get involved, and what we can do, et cetera. So that's me.
Robert.
So, good evening, Bahamas. I'm Robert Ritchie from Bahamas Safety Solutions. I am also a member of the Bahamas Association of Safety Professionals. I offer occupational health and safety training and certification, you know. And I think what we are doing here this evening is very important because, you know, we have a very high rate of occupational fatalities in this country.
Fatalities, which is interesting.
And I didn't say injuries.
No.
I said fatalities in this country.
We've had three, so three that I know of. So
as passionate as you are about your licensing for your contractors.
Yes, that's life for me.
We are as passionate of trying to solve this problem that we have in front of us.
Yes.
Robert, let me give you a case in point. It's a project that is going on next to me. To a project that I'm doing in Sandyport. And the roof is probably a 12-12.
Oh, wow.
Okay?
That means it's steep like this.
Yeah. And so I'm watching the guys. They apply the ice and water shield. Okay? And so the rope is tied onto something on the opposite side. The rope. And tied to them. They do have a harness on it. Mm. Which was good.
That's
I like to
more,
see that.
Yeah.
However, I noticed that, well, first of all, it's just a rope over the ridge line. Thank God the ridge line is about 25 to 30 feet, so it could move up and down. But that's not the exact proper way you do it. Now, I want Robert, the passionate safety professional, how should someone properly address working on, they're about 35, 40 feet in air, steep roof, and they have to do work. How do they properly tie themselves? Because the reason people don't do it is because they can't figure out how to do it and still do the work. Explain how we can do that.
Well, the reality of it is what you're talking about is fall protection.
Mm-hmm.
And fall protection in the construction industry is the easiest thing in the world. Because whatever you, how should I say this? What you have to do is you have to install an anchor point. Okay? And once you install an anchor point, you lock onto that anchor point.
You lock onto the anchor point.
All right?
Which I did not see.
The fantastic thing is, especially like you said, you're on a roof. Once you're finished, you could remove that anchor point and you can repair any damage that anchor point created. And also, there are so many different options for anchor points that you don't ever even need to, you do not need to put the anchor point in the actual roof. I have a client that I bought an anchor point for them that worked on straps and worked on tension.
Really?
It was for a, it's actually called a G-clamp.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you actually the client is rent to kill because they didn't want you to take an anchor point and hammer it into
the roof. Yeah, they don't want that.
So what this thing did is that it locked on each boxing. There's an anchor that goes in the apex of the roof.
Mm-hmm.
You use two straps that connect everything, and boom.
And then it moves between the ridge.
You could put the anchor point, and as long as that, as long as your lanyard,
yeah,
which connects your harness to the mm-hmm. anchor point, as long as that's not long enough that if you were to fall
you right hit on the ground, yeah,
you're fine. As far as you want.
Yeah.
And the anchor point was is rated for like 3,000 pounds.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So you could connect five, six, seven people, depending on the size.
What I didn't like about it, as I observed it, is that they had the lanyard, which was good. They had an anchor point, but the anchor point was on the opposite side of the building in the soffit. And the challenge is with that is that you're relying on the ridge to be the point that you can't roll off. Now, if the rope rolls and you go on the slope side, the length between where you're anchored and when you fall, you're going to get to the ground first. That's why, like Robert is saying, you need an anchor by the ridge. It keeps it small that you can only go between here and here. The anchor point is almost small. The rope can do this and this, but you have to make sure that you can't end up on the ground. But to me, if I were doing it, I'd anchor on the ridge. I could, it's easier right there. It's right in front of me. It's up on the ridge. And then I only want to be able to get rolled down. I've seen videos. I only want to dangle off the roof probably about 4 or 5 feet. I don't want to almost get to the ground and then I stop. That's too close for comfort. I just want to roll up and boom. I'm hanging right at the soffit level and then someone can pull me up. That's my ideal.
You know, the reality of it is that companies in the Bahamas, well, they don't take safety seriously because no one enforces safety.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Eustacia will tell you, mm-hmm. if we was to pull out the OSHA standard right now for general industry,
construction, right. We couldn't do anything.
One of them was like this.
Yeah, we wouldn't do anything.
And they break it down for you step by step.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay? Realistically, you can't expect people in the Bahamas to just jump into the deep end.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Like, for example, for OSHA, like you said, for your roof project in OSHA, the first thing I can tell you is you need to have a warning light. It has to be 6 feet from the edge.
From the edge. How do you establish that?
You just get your cones or you get mobile stands
mm-hmm.
and you just run a pennant flag
mm-hmm.
around the roof.
So you can't be operating within 6 feet of where this guy is above there.
Exactly.
We don't do that.
No.
We don't do that.
We don't do anything like that.
No.
All right. And the reality of it is that it's all about because companies don't want to spend money.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, we have large construction companies in this country.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. So, and any one of those large construction companies can call someone like Eustacia and say, listen, I need a safety program because
mm-hmm.
I don't do that. That's what she does.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I don't do training. That's what he does.
Right.
Collaborate.
Well, y'all gotta figure this out now.
No, we work together. Okay. I send my people to him if they need support. Right. Yeah.
Because I can't. That's a little too much paperwork for me. That's a lot of writing.
And you're into that.
But the thing is, if you're serious, that's mm-hmm. what you have to
that's
do.
That's what you right. do.
Mm-hmm. And then you need to have a safety officer.
Mm-hmm.
All right? You know, and people, like I said, we have a high rate of fatalities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody even knows the injuries because nobody really. The only person that would keep these NIB. Numbers would be NIB.
Right.
And that's not necessarily public.
No.
No.
But right? we could ask that information. Again, they still may not tell us, but you can ask. But it's probably, we have a lot of persons, which I found out in construction too, who are on.
Disability. And I was just talking about this.
Yeah.
If you go by NIB's annual reports, and the last one that we had available was 2022, I think, and looking at the amount of claims and the amount that's being paid
industrial
out.
Industrial accidents.
$20 million.
Yeah.
Over $20 million
in industrial
benefits. And that includes a year. It was a little lull. It was like 17 or 16 million during COVID because anybody was hardly doing mm-hmm. nothing. But it's back up to like $20 million in 2022. I don't know what it is the last couple of years. But if even we took a fraction of that and put that towards preventative measures, mm-hmm. the investment, what we would see as a country.
Yeah.
You know, and that includes your death benefits, that includes your disabilities, mm-hmm. your accidents, et cetera. And not just what happened this year, but those who may have had accidents from 5 years ago and mm-hmm. still claiming. But that's how much is paid out on an annual basis. $20 million.
So that kind of tells you the volume of incidents that we have.
And those are just the ones that are approved because there are claims that come in that don't get approved,
mm-hmm.
right? Because because NIB is very strict on how to fill out the forms mm-hmm. and what they approve, even deaths that come in that don't get approved. Mm-hmm. So those are the ones that are actually paid out, not the claims that are actually made. And they have that reported in their annual reports too.
Now,
and it's just, And we don't analyze it to see, like, where are the greatest risks coming from? Mm-hmm. Where are these coming from so we could be more preventative, so we could apply corrective actions in those areas and actually do...
Well, lately it's been heavy equipment. We had the one fellow that was killed on the excavator, the other guy with the forklift, right? Mm-hmm. And then wasn't the other one with a
car. There was another one with a car. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
the guy that fell off the scaffolding.
There's four, right? Uh-huh. So we're up, but we can't just sit and do that. Whoever is collecting that data, like in the in the U.S., you can go on the OSHA website, you can see the data.
Yeah.
You know that reporting it makes it easier.
They have freedom of information.
Imagine that, Debbie, and how beneficial that can be to a country.
We're not there. We're the Bahamas. We believe in secrecy.
What we don't expose, we can't correct.
No, we can't correct.
It's frustrating. And so even as safety professionals, we want to be able to analyze. Yeah. So even people in your own companies and stuff, you look at your accidents and see where they're happening. You try to do analysis and see, okay, we're having a lot of slip and falls. What's going on? Mm-hmm. Let's try to address this, you know?
Yeah.
And we would see that, you know, there it's in certain high-risk areas and you see a trend. But we can't even pick up trends if we're not analyzing the data.
Boats as well and engines. Why don't you read the numbers for people to call? Because there must be people out there that are going through these same problems with us. We wait till the end of the show to give them the numbers and then wonder why they didn't call.
The numbers that people, we put out there for you to call to join in this conversation. It's going to get deep in a minute here. It's not deep now. 323-6232, 325-4316. 325-4259, and from the Family Island, 300-5720. And you can join the conversation by BTC Power text line 422-GR96. Now,
there you go.
One of the interesting, and look at that, the minute we said that, we got lined up. So, one of the things I find interesting, though, about safety, and Robert, I know you notice that the minute we do projects for persons from outside the country, they seem to be ready on the site safe.
Yeah.
And we have to do a lot more effort to get our people to want to be safe.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, before you answer that, let me take this call and let's see what you got to say. Call you live, go ahead.
A pleasant good evening. How you doing, sir?
Doing well.
That's Miss Deal on the show.
Yes.
That is Debbie Deal.
That's Scotty's wife.
Scotty's wife.
That's Charlie Moss.
Charlie Moss's, yes, nephew. Yes, Charlie Moss, Moss
so
Gas.
You know who you're talking to now, right?
Oh, my God. Yes.
I got a memory and a history. I want to tell you, listen to something.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, this lady came on Guardian, and she was telling people how to save electric city. And she came down to Sparky's house.
Mm-hmm.
She that walked through the house, and she said, Sparky, you know what you could do? I see some mistakes you're making. All these little surge protectors, you see them little lights on there? All them burning electricity all day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She didn't say disconnect them because they can protect your equipment in case power surge. But she say, when you walk out every room, turn off the light as you get out the room. A lot of our people, we complaining with electricity and you're broke, you can't buy corned beef and rice, but you got your whole yard, your whole life, your house light up all night.
Like Christmas tree.
In the bedroom, mm-hmm. watching TV, you're sleeping, your front room light on, your kitchen light on, your bathroom light on, your whole house light up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And man, I started doing what she said, dude. Because I remember my mother used to say that when you come out the room,
cut off the light.
Put your hand on the button and turn the light off and you're not in the room.
And they even have things where you don't even have to motion turn the switch sentence. Anymore. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is when you come out of the room, whatever it is sees you. And you're out, and then the power goes off in that room. So, yeah.
Well, right. I can tell you this deal.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have these funny bills, and I used to complain about the cost of electricity. And then I started going to BEC, BPL, who they... And then first called me, said, how come you only paying $100-something? How come your bill is only $19? I mean $90.
Mm-hmm.
And mine is $300, $400, $500, and $1,000. I pay rent. And my light bill is more than my mortgage. I say, guess what? Why are you leaving your lights on in your house?
Yeah.
Leave your car light on, too. What will happen if you leave your car light on and your car engine ain't running with the alternator?
You're calling for a taxi in the
your
morning.
Your battery could be dead in the morning, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Battery dead.
Behaving.
Yeah.
Anytime you come out of the bathroom, turn the light off.
Yeah.
When you leave the bedroom to go on the porch to listen to some old and goldy music, turn the lights off.
Yeah.
If you're outside on your porch listening to old and goldy, turn your TV off.
Yeah.
You got your TV on in the bedroom, but you're on the porch listening to old and goldy on the boombox.
Yeah. So, Sparky, I thank you for calling, but we're trying to save some lives here today. So if you have some good suggestions, if you have some good suggestions for us as to what we could possibly do, let us know. But we want to hear these people.
I'm glad he mentioned that because, mm-hmm. Yesterday was Earth Day.
Yes,
so,
it was.
So, and that kind of ties into with saving. Because my logo for my company is Safe People, Safe Places, Safe Planet. Because I do environmental and safety as an environmental and safety professional.
Social responsibility.
Yes, and ESG, and they all tie together.
They do.
When you start to be conscious and aware, not just of the saving lives, but also safety in the home, but also the environment.
Correct.
They all tie together.
They
do. And they all work to make us more efficient.
They do.
And it just takes us making effort, right, and being more aware. Because if you had never told him that,
Right. Well, a lot of people don't even think of half of the things that I can tell you to reduce your energy costs, right?
Exactly.
Because,
Let me ask both of you this question, and this is a question.
You don't let anyone into the environment. They'll talk.
Yes. No.
Oh, listen, he's going to be a tree hugger next week, Wednesday at Cope Pant. Yes, at Cope Pant. Yes.
Pictures and videos.
Yes. Which means I'm coming to watch you
from 9 to 10.
The luncheon.
No, because you're on from 9 till 10:30.
Yeah, that sounds like a whole day. Anyhow, thank you for letting me know. I didn't remember what time it was either. Which day.
Did you send your notes in to Laquelle?
I did.
Oh, good.
I
okay.
I finally got it in. Here's my thing, especially in construction. Construction to me has the most instances where there has to be more consideration for safety because of the nature of the work. And when I mean construction, I don't mean generally active outdoor construction. I'm talking about persons who work in factories, persons who work in an environment where there are heavy machinery, equipment, things. And I find that we leave it to the businesses to determine their level of safety because, like Robert had mentioned again, there's no enforcement of it.
Mm-hmm.
What I'd like to see as president of the Contractors Association, generally, that we could... When I say we, everyone in the construction community raised the standard of safety in one area. Mm. Now, for me, it's scaffolding. Mm. I can tell you, and you've seen it. You drive around this island, scaffolding it goes from pretty good to downright scary.
Yes.
The reason why that is I'm going to ask a question right now. Where does a construction company right now send their erectors to learn how to properly erect a scaffold?
Google.
what do you think they go, Robert? And I'm not talking with the big company. I talk with the three guys in a truck who's building a single family home in Yellow Elder. Where do they go to learn how to erect a scaffold properly?
Let me tell you something. Honestly, there's no one company in Nassau you could go to that'll teach you. Mm-hmm. But the people that rent you scaffolding are experienced enough that if you are willing to spend the money,
that's the part.
They will show you. Yeah. But see, that is the issue. We could talk about this all day. Mm-hmm. This boils down to money.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. See, safety is a culture.
Mm-hmm.
You see, it's like you said earlier with the international companies. Mm-hmm. When they come here, they got this, they got procedures set up.
Mm-hmm. Right? Standards.
Non-negotiable.
Yeah.
Listen, when I worked for Switzer, which is a multinational, multi-billion dollar company, all right, they had something we call a HMS system, Harmonized Management System. Mm-hmm. That was our safety procedures. Mm-hmm. That thing was this thick.
Wow.
And what you did in Freeport, Grand Bahama,
it's the same
was
thing.
What was done in Australia.
Wow.
What was done in Brazil, in Argentina.
It doesn't
it's
change.
The same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And also... And this is the important part about it. If when I was there and I as a captain, and if I said, you know what, I'm not going to do this. This is unsafe. I never had to worry about my job.
No.
I never had to worry about retribution. No. I never had to worry about, oh my God, well, suppose they disagree with me. Which one time I made a judgment call. It was the wrong judgment call.
Mm-hmm.
The company was like, well, okay. You know, I'd rather you do this than make a mistake.
Then make a mistake and it costs a person's lives,
But the problem is we don't have safety culture in this country.
No.
You know, it's like the project I'm doing now, mm-hmm. you know, we have truckers coming on the site. And what are they wearing as truckers? Shorts. Mm. They're wearing shorts.
Flip-flops.
They don't have any safety vests on.
Nothing.
They don't even have the
placards or the tops. The cover. Mm-hmm.
To cover
yeah.
the truck.
Yeah.
Mm. They're supposed to because right. every day we have to work all this last year on trying to get that sorted out, right?
Right. Yeah.
But who's enforcing that? Who's on the road looking for that?
The police are supposed to do that.
Oh, the same police that we want to be in the forest looking for the people who are illegally chopping down trees, the same police that
yes.
we want also be in the forest
well, actually,
looking
yes.
for people who
I
are doing this
I think we could
that.
Actually call Baldwin. To be perfectly honest, we could call them and they would be able to do it. That way they would be. So I don't want to totally change, but the thing that bothers me, because I don't do the new construction. I was born with Charles Rome.
Yeah.
So, the thing that bothers me the most is when persons are, like, cutting tiles, doing masonry work, anything like that. They do not wear safety goggles.
At all.
They're cutting things that are chipping and things are going in their eyes, and then you can see later that they... And they're not protecting. They don't even mm-hmm. think about the fact.
It's a culture.
Right. It's a culture.
It's literally a culture.
My dad, he was a welder. I think I may have told you all the story. Mm-hmm. And he'd be like, oh, that piece of steel in my eye. You know?
like that's normal.
Yeah. Get a magnet. It's not aluminum. It's there forever.
And, you know, he had toxic poisoning later and stuff. All the elements mm-hmm. in his body was all out of whack because they weren't wearing masks. They weren't doing all this back in the day.
But as you said, let's do something simple. Like, why don't we start with hard hats? Vest,
gloves,
boots, and goggles.
And on that day, can we just look across
simple things?
What date is again? You say here?
It's April 28th.
April 28th. So we got
next week Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Next week Tuesday, we got a couple of days. I'm putting out this appeal to all members of the Bahamian Contractors Association, mm-hmm. all contractors in general. I'm going to do a spot check on April 28th of. Whether it's a member site or mm-hmm. anyone's site, if I go to a site and I see everyone inside, I'm going to assume that I'm going to have the board support me on this. If I do a snapshot of that site mm-hmm. and I see everyone on that site in proper PPE, that company, if they're not a member, they get free membership.
Wow.
Now that's
That'd be
a call.
Great.
If the company is a member and I did a snapshot and they're in full PPE, they don't have to pay their membership fee next year.
Challenge it's
risky. We make the money up on the back end. But for World Safety Day, if we could have the impact, which is noticeable, that everyone in the construction site is in PPE, I think we have moved the needle that much.
And if you're a small company, just choose one thing that you think is the most important. Where are you having the biggest problems, right?
Right? The risk assessment. Because you can't just throw PPE at everything, right?
Is it the safety thing because people can't see you when they're backing in and backing out or stuff? Or is it the hard hat? You know, it just depends.
Pick something for the area that you're in.
And make your company, everyone in your company, do that one thing.
Right.
And 6 months down the road, you could do another thing.
Mm-hmm. You don't have to
eat the whole elephant at one time, you know? Eat an elephant one bite at a time, right?
We always talk about change management, you know, because it's going to come with changes. I mean, we try to go into companies and implement safety management systems because I'm opposed to just throwing PPE at everything. I talk about hierarchy of controls and making sure you assess the risk and then work with that. Because sometimes people just say, oh, if I own PPE, I'm safe. But that's not the case, right?
A lot of people don't even understand what you're saying. Why?
Exactly. Personal protective equipment for PPE. Yeah. So your hierarchy of control, looking at what your risks are and then trying to control those risks. And you put in measures, whether it be elimination is the first thing that you should try to try to eliminate the risk. And then you substitute the risk if you can't eliminate it. You engineering controls, your anchor points, your guardrails, whatever the case may be.
Right.
And then your administrative controls, your policies and procedures. Because you could give them PPE, but if they don't know how to use it or the training, then... Mm-hmm. You know, and then there's PPE also. Not that you don't have PPE, but you can't just throw PPE at stuff. And I love the initiative because it's a good step.
Because
that's a good indicator. If I pass a company, you know, and I don't see PPE, that's a good sign that you're not doing anything else up there.
Yeah.
If you ain't even doing PPE, you probably ain't doing the rest of that stuff, right?
Yeah.
And so, but I can't assume once I see you with PPE that you're doing the other stuff either, right? But at least it's a step. Another thing that they can do, one of the few things that's actually in the Health and Safety at Work Act is safety committees. We talked about this, I think, before. Mm-hmm. If you, that's actually in the law. If you have 20 persons or more employed, you're supposed to have a safety committee. And that safety committee could just be getting together in the mornings once a week to talk about safety on the site. Mm-hmm. Hey, guys, what's going on? We had any near misses, any accidents, anything that we need to improve, mm-hmm. any hazardous conditions, you know, how do we address it? And you know, people are like, oh, that's not, that doesn't apply to construction, but it does.
Yeah. It
and
does,
even in your morning, your tailboard meetings or your job, you know, your huddles in the morning before mm-hmm. you start work, talk about safety. You know what I mean? Just put something out there and mention it on a daily basis so it's at the forefront. Like, you have to make it a part of your, not like we're doing safety. It has to be a part of your culture, a part of your organization and your regular routine for it really to be effective.
Right. Yeah.
And that's what I tried. That's what I, with my clients, because sometimes they want me to just come in and fix it. They're like, I can't just fix those things. I'm like, we have to address the whole thing.
The producer's trying to get us to do our break.
Oh, okay.
Yes. That's what the music is. He's trying so hard.
All right, so we're going to take...
And he's smiling at us.
We're going to take our first break, and we'll be back right after this message.
All right, now the last people supposed to answer this, either their brain was freeze or a couple of screws was loose.
Not me, bro. I sharp. I get this.
Yeah, you sharp as a button, man.
All right, I can see just how sharp y'all is, because you skip a button on your shirt. Well, anyhow. All right, question is, it doesn't rust.
Uh-huh.
No corrosion. It's lighter and stronger than its opponent. What is it?
I know this. I know, but it's steel.
Nope. Wrong answer. Fiberglass rebar. Y'all ain't sharp.
I go on and say that, no.
You don't even know what I mean.
All right, here's what makes fiber rebar a no-brainer compared to steel. It don't rust. Steel rebar does rust and crack up your wall like biscuit. Two, fiber rebar is lighter than steel. Steel rebar is way more heavier, so that means it costs you more money and labor. And three, coated steel is more expensive than fiber rebar. And with cheap steel, you still have to paint it. Still costs you money. For more information, call Odd Heavy Equipment and Development today at 603-4506 or 822-9527. Fiber rebar is better than steel.
When I wake up in the morning and I take a walk outside, I see the sunshine, I see a new day, and that feeling puts a smile right on my face. I know just what to do, go to the paint place. So if you wanna paint it right the first time, go to the paint place, stop at the paint place. And if you want it to last a lifetime, go to the paint place, stop at the paint place.
When we started StormFrame Windows in 1999, we wanted to fabricate an impact-rated product to compete with the Florida market, and we've done this. There's no fabricator or vendor from Florida that can do what we can in the Bahamas. Because we fabricate locally and we're a local-based company, we have the capability to provide better customer service than our competitors. With all the worldwide supply chain issues, we at StormFrame have improved our fabrication process and have invested in stock to be able to produce our orders in 4 weeks. We also keep in stock over 400 windows and doors at standard sizes for walk-in customers to purchase. Our professional sales staff is here to assist you with the complete purchase and installation. We also service and ship to the Outer Islands.
Thank you for your support, Bahamas.
Thank you for your support, Bahamas.
And now a word from your local Sherwin-Williams Paints family.
We were taught that we must communicate with the customers so that we can give them the right product that they need, not just because you are make a sale. We make it a point to ask questions so that we can make your project that day effective. Do it right the first time.
That's the truth.
But that's how we is.
That's how we is.
Not a joke.
No joke at all. Sherwin-Williams Bahamas. Find color in every day.
The all-new CBSBahamas.com is faster, smarter, and we've made it even easier to browse our inventory of over 11,000 products. Earn reward points with every online purchase. Check out our new AI-powered chat assistant, available 24/7. You can even select a date and time for items to be delivered to your house, job site, or the mailboat. Our Family Island customers are loving it. Build beautiful throughout the Bahamas with the new CBSBahamas.com.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And we're back to Guardian Radio 96.9 and Nailed It. It's our show today. And before we get anything started, I want to just reach out and thank our wonderful sponsors. Now, these sponsors is a combined list of the persons who supported our fantastic Mix and Mingle last Friday and also sponsors for the show. So, starting at the top and in alphabetical order. No, ooh, we're not doing that.
I was going to say.
We have ART Development, CBS Bahamas, Engineering and Technical Services, The Pink Place, Stone Oat Bahamas, Sherwin-Williams, Simplified Lending, Trustco, Wolseley Construction, Closets, etc., Veritas Consultants, and
Superior
Walls. Yes. Thank you all for sponsoring our Mix and Mingle and those who sponsor this show. We really, really would not be here without the sponsors we have.
The person with that lending money?
Yeah, whatever. Simplified Lending.
Right.
Yeah.
He has a big sign right by Sabaz's EV place on Harold. Harold Road anymore, but. Yeah.
Yeah, they're doing a lot of good space inside the lending community, micro lending, and also they do have products for the construction community, bridge loans, which banks don't offer. So I always find it interesting. Yeah, anymore. So I find it interesting when persons identify a short in the market in supply that need. Because, again, you're doing a project, right? Just 2 seconds on this. And you got $100,000 to completion, you got $80,000. You're short $20,000. Where do you go for the $20,000? Well, with this instance, you could call Simplified Lending, show them your contract, show them how the payments work, and you get your bridge loan.
You're $20,000 short because of why?
Because they give you a rigid payment schedule, and the payment schedule amounted to, let's say, 10%, and your 10%.
You'll get paid that later.
And I was having this conversation in real estate exchange. Okay, let's say you're doing a $500,000 house, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the math what they don't seem to get. Rigid banks. And they say first stage payment is 10%. Okay? 10% of $500,000 is $50,000. But when you measured out all the labor and materials needed to do the floor. Let's say you didn't need all that much. You needed $60,000. So off the bat, to pour your floor from under the ground, I need $60,000. First stage payment is 10% of $500,000, which is only $50,000. You're already at $10,000 short.
And then each stage made up that.
It compounds.
And then you have contracts. Right. I have a client that have an issue because they didn't want to issue a mobilization fee.
Yeah.
Right. And there were supplies and stuff that needed to be purchased up front. And they didn't want to approve that. And it's like, so how do we
I don't want to build your house.
Yeah. Building type thing, but it was still, you know what I mean? But that, I was like, okay, that doesn't make any sense.
And for all of us who are professionals in the space who do some kind of contracting service, it's the same thing.
Right.
I often tell people, and I said it at a real estate exchange with God, everyone just chuckling and laughing. I said, I'm your contractor. Mm-hmm. I'm not your financial institution.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which means you need something built, yes, I'm the person you call. You need money to get the thing you need built, you call the other guys.
Right. Absolutely.
But Robert sums that they have an expectation that the contractor also comes with their money.
With the money.
To finance the project. And I said, if you find one willing to do that, the only thing I hope is that they charge you a finance fee because they're taking money out of their bank to put into your project. Yeah. And the last time I checked, they really don't hardly get any interest. So imagine taking money out already. Like, I'm a charger. I told them my interest rate is 25%, so you don't want to borrow no money from me.
While we were waiting for you guys to come, Robert and I were chatting, and Robert says, you know what you should do? You should do a show on the breakdown of how to build a house. And I told Robert that you and
we started that.
And we got, I think, to windows and doors stage.
We got distracted with all the other things.
Maybe we need to do it again because Robert says that a lot of people probably do not understand
what's
even necessary before you even clear the property.
Oh, my God.
You know what I mean?
I'm going through the process right now.
Yeah.
And that whole thing, I mean, buying was like, oh, you just need 10% down. Before I even get to the 10% down, I already spent like, I had to clear the property. Yes. I had to get a new survey. Yes. I had to get, severance.
You're gonna need electricity.
Because my it's building in the back. I need another pole and all this stuff. And I'm in the legal fees and this. And I'm like, okay,
You're spending money before you even start building on the thing you want to.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. can I just live in the drawing? Because when I pay for the drawing, can I just live in that?
Like, you realistically need, just $50,000.
Yes.
Free start of construction.
Free, just to think about starting.
Just for your, what they call incidental.
Yes, definitely. Okay. Yeah,
and that's what it is.
Now, when you say it like that, also, okay, let's talk about safety too. Mm. Safety isn't free.
Yeah,
and so as much, and I understand your passion, and I understand your station, your passion. Here's why, though, we have the challenge that we do. So who's going to pay the safety officer?
Mm.
Who ensures that there's a flagman that's ensure that the guy isn't working unsafe? And guess what? That's a valuable thing to have.
Yes.
But when they go to Debbie, who's going to have to pay for this project, and they start to look at the line item, that safety officer, can we cut that line item out?
Mm. But can't the safety officer be a carpenter or a mason or an electrician or on the job site?
Hold on, let me say this.
Should you want that to be that?
Let me say this. I disagree with that.
Go ahead.
Because what a lot of companies try to do is they try to take someone from HR to be their safety person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay? HR.
There is a significant difference between someone who is an HR
and a field person.
Mm-hmm. There's a huge difference.
No, I agree.
Okay?
Yeah. I agree.
And my attitude is this. Safety doesn't have to be expensive, you know.
Mm.
It doesn't cost a lot to get a safety vest. It doesn't cost a lot for a hard hat.
Mm.
You can buy work boots for $60.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you can't afford to do that, then you shouldn't be in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay? Because we all know there's nothing cheap in the Bahamas.
No.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that if you have a job and you're making $60,000, $70,000, if you can't put another $500 for a line item for PPE.
For PPE, then,
you shouldn't have to do it.
I totally agree.
You, that's not the business for you to be in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. A safety professional, you could mix safety and environment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But that's the person has to be, especially on large projects, they have to be committed to that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, they have to be committed to that. They have to know, if you're removing soil, where is the soil going?
Mm-hmm.
I need to have a record that the soil was received and it was properly disposed of.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I need to know when people come on the site, they need to have an orientation.
Mm-hmm.
They need to understand what's going on. See, accidents happen because people don't communicate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's true in everything.
Right, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But, and like I said earlier, you need to have a culture of safety.
So let me add to your point, because you said something that I think went over too too quickly, mm-hmm. but it's the pivotal point you said. Accidents happen because people don't communicate. So I'm going through my mind as I heard the story of what happened with the unfortunate incident on the hill with the guy who was doing the excavation and all the material came on him and no one could find him. That's a communication problem. First of all...
He should have had a radio.
First of all, forget all that. Who is watching the guy operating the equipment?
Exactly. Yeah.
Because the moment that happened, somebody should have been radioed, hey, we have an accident. Mr. Mm-hmm. Joe, whatever his name is, the King material King fell King. On him. Because accidents will happen.
Yeah.
But that communication thing is important. To notice that no one noticed that they didn't see a coworker for a long time was a communication issue because there was a lack of what we call a spotter. Someone, and we all know it, if someone's doing something, who's the person observing? That's why for me, I don't like the idea of you saying you could take a carpenter and be, no. I want a guy whose job is to walk around a site and, like you said, identify the risk mm-hmm. and eliminate the risk. Let me tell you on the site we're on.
So you don't think we should train somebody in our crew?
Absolutely, I agree with you. Oh. We should. Mm-hmm. But I think you want to give them that specific role because if he's cutting someone behind him doing something unsafe, he can't see him. I was telling guys before, I don't like contractor carpenters. You're going to either be the contractor or you can be the carpenter. Because whilst you're around the corner working on the soffit, your guy in the back there is having a smoke and not doing any work. So which one are you? Are you going to be the guy managing your site? Or are you going to be the best carpenter on the job site? And I met a great, brilliant guy in Abaco who is a great carpenter and a terrible contractor. Mm-hmm. Because he's so into this wonderful mahogany staircase, he was losing $1,000 a day because guys were hardly delivering anything for him because he was so head deep in this. But I say that to the same point. If you're the safety guy, and on our site, we have a safety officer, mm-hmm. and before that, we did the safety protocols. We have a safety policy. It's not as rigid as it should be. It leaves a lot to be desired, in my opinion, but it's something. It's documented. We do safety meetings every week.
Training, everything.
Every single week. It's documented, all that stuff. But we have a rule. If anyone of the unit, and we have 29 unit managers and about 15 senior managers, if anyone in there, we do a site walk every day. No big deal. But if we come and see a splice cord, there's no conversation, we just got to go.
If you see a what? Sorry?
A spliced cord.
Oh, cord. Oh,
there's
yes.
no conversation because everyone on the site gets issued the safety policy.
Mm-hmm.
You go to orientation with it, and we weekly advise the safety policy. Mm-hmm. So the minute we see a breach, there's no conversation. We just cut the cord. So all of a sudden, you were in the power tool, there's no power. You get to the end of it, it's cut.
Well, that makes sense.
So you need to get a new cord now.
That makes sense because they're going to just keep using that.
Yeah, so we know that.
They do.
Until we make them unable to use it, they're going to continue. Oh, yeah, we don't want that. And we see crazy things. You see people tape up an electrical cord with not masking tape.
Painter's tape.
Mm-hmm. Which is paper. And I'm thinking to myself, are you trying to cause a fire?
Right.
And you know why they do it? They don't know. They don't connect the dots.
Right.
That this is electrical. A spark on paper is generally going to cause a fire.
Yes.
You know why? Because they have not been exposed to the risks
right.
associated with
the
doing
why.
That.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So your point is, so we need to train in this country. We need to train safety. Make it a part of what a little child should know that my dad is going out to a dangerous work. And that's another connection. We don't appreciate that. Children think, oh, my dad's going to work today on a 9-story building. That's normal. Yeah, it's normal. But your dad's also working in a very, very dangerous environment.
Mm-hmm.
We don't identify things like that. We don't recognize that the person who's working in that space is more
at risk
mm-hmm. than the person who's filing some conveyance in an attorney's office. We think it's all the same.
You see, this is why you need to have a dedicated safety professionals.
Yeah.
Because you need people to understand, you know, how do I identify a hazard?
Yeah.
Right.
What is a hazard?
What is a hazard?
Right.
All right. How do I fix this? Or like Stacey said, oh God, it'll lose me now.
Corrective actions.
Well, yeah.
How do I determine how do I establish a, how do I use a risk assessment?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. You know, and once I get that information, what do I do with this information?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And these are what safety professionals do.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And if you have any large project, you need to have that.
Mm-hmm.
That needs to happen. You know, one thing I always do whenever I have a project, every morning, you have a toolbox talk.
Yes. Yep. That's what you meant. Just talk about.
It lasts maybe 10 minutes. And what are you doing? What are you doing
today? What are we doing today?
Yeah. Where are you working today?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. We got radio. It's good. We want to do this here. We want to try and get this done here. Boom. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Mm-hmm. It's done. But see, and this might be an unpopular thing to say, but Bahamians are allergic to order.
We love chaos.
We
by the handle.
We just, and I mean, we won't do
thrive
it.
In yes. that.
And the reason why, the reason why we don't do it is because when we do something wrong, there's little or no consequence.
Mm, right.
You know, and I learned when, like, for example, when I worked for Switzer,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you stop their job because you had safety concerns, that's fine. But if you took a huge risk,
and it caused an incident that stopped the job.
And it didn't cause any incident. You just took a risk.
You'll lose your job.
You can lose your job.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And yeah. they told me that when they hired me.
Mm-hmm.
They said, you will be fired.
Wow.
And then they said, you can sue me all you want.
Mm-hmm. Like, we're big enough. We
exactly.
Can take it in. Wow.
But we don't think along those lines.
No.
You know, we have had, like I said, we have had a significant occupational deaths.
Yeah.
Yes.
And recently, deaths.
And yes. Nobody is saying anything.
Nothing. Yeah.
I mean, they say something right after it happens, yeah. And then it dies now. And that's one of the things, because what's the investigation? What were the root cause analysis mm-hmm. so we could determine, so we could prevent mm-hmm. this from happening again?
Yeah.
And I always say this, and people say, I say, because they died in vain.
Yeah.
Because
mm-hmm.
someone else can die that same way, mm-hmm. because you didn't do
Nobody
anything
did
to change
anything.
The system,
mm-hmm.
to change how we do things, to prevent this from happening again.
Correct.
And I will stand by that, because, and if you do an investigation, who do you share it with?
Yeah.
Do other people in that industry know, so that they can implement the changes, and they can make the corrections, so that it doesn't happen?
Association certainly didn't get
exactly right, and that's the quickest way. Because so if something happens on a construction site,
yeah.
come to you guys and be like, hey, we need y'all to share this
need
with the rest of
something.
Your members,
yeah.
because we noticed that this is an issue
mm-hmm.
and that we need to address it. And we have these associations we can work with in partnership and collaboration
mm-hmm.
to get the messaging
yeah.
out there,
right.
And to prevent these things from happening again.
Because we have a website and
mm-hmm.
we have a Facebook page,
yeah.
so we can always post things on
right.
all of those things.
And
right?
we have a relationship with our members.
With your members,
and
when I need something
not.
To go out to your members,
yeah.
I send it to you, and
mm-hmm.
you email them or whatever the case
mm-hmm.
may be when it comes to safety.
But
so we can do that.
You made a very important point, which goes to how things work in the United States or
mm.
other places. All right, let's say through the data collection,
mm-hmm.
through NIB, they realize that there's a lot of incidents of people falling off scaffolding, right?
Yeah.
And they would know first more than us
mm-hmm.
because everything doesn't get reported to us.
Right.
So let's say someone's looking at this data and say, you know, we've had 19 slip and fall accidents or falling from, and it doesn't have to be 30 stories, off a 6-foot scaffold, and someone hurt their back, hurt their foot, hurt their whatever, and they got this data. They ring up the BCA and say, hey, I tell you what, is there any way that you could have some kind of PSA or some kind of, which we do, reach out to a safety professional,
mm-hmm.
have a specific training
yes, to address
for
that
our problem. Members
yes.
to address that
mm-hmm.
in response to
mm-hmm.
the data that came to us. But if you don't share the data,
right.
if we have a communication problem,
exactly.
how do we fix an issue?
So since you guys are safety professionals,
mm-hmm.
would you not be able to approach NIB and...
They both laughed at the same time. So Debbie and I need to understand why at the same time.
Oh, God bless you.
I know, right? We should.
Mind you, let me say this. The people at NIB are very nice.
Very
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Okay? And they are very
The customer
receptive.
Service is very good, yeah.
yeah.
It's the system. It doesn't
That's what it
lend
is.
To it, and it's
you
not
know.
A part of procedure
so
and
the
policy.
Guy with,
it
the
has
guy who
to
died
be.
With the excavator, I know the person who that job was on. We
mm.
could possibly reach out to that person whose job it was on. I don't
but
know.
But you get
other.
That's one instance. We're talking
I know,
about
but I'm just saying, every time we hear these, if they're not going to share it with NIB or whatever, we need to find out whose job was that on, who could we speak to in that, you know what I'm saying?
What is the investigation? What are the findings? And
well,
how
yeah,
can we
else
lend aid and to assist in preventing this from happening
but
again?
You
but,
know,
yeah,
you know the thing is, and forgive me for this, I mean, I'm trying not to rant here, but It is the things that we choose to care about.
Yeah. That
let me give an example. Yeah. I went to the, what do you call it, the probate office, the one off Bernard Road. Now, that's not a court or anything. That's just a probate office.
I love that place. It was so easy to get paperwork and stuff.
I was denied entry because I was wearing shorts, slippers, and I was dressed the same way I'm dressed now. Okay? There's nothing wrong with the way I'm dressed. There's a sign outside that says that you can't wear what you can and cannot wear. They have a person at the door to stop you. All of that to deny me entrance because I am wearing shorts.
Short pants. Yeah, that's so important.
What are we doing if someone died digging filled with an excavator?
Nothing.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It is what we choose to care about. And not only is this guy standing at that door, there are three other doors where they have people that they are paying a salary to stop people
from wearing shorts.
From giving the government money.
Yeah. Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
It is crazy, but this is the Bahamas. I don't. We are very, very, and I'm trying to be very careful, like I said, we focus major on the minor.
Major on major, the minor.
And the same experience happened at the Ministry of Education. They had the same policy written. And I'm saying so because a friend of mine was going to collect some documents. And they just was happened to be out that had on a spaghetti string strap top and whatever. And you're going to get some documents from a clerk. You're not going to see the minister. Why does the apparel matter that much? But again, you go into the probate court to pick up a document. You're in the Bahamas. We wear flip-flops and short pants. I should wear a suit in the Bahamas to make someone feel comfortable. Who is the person I'm making comfortable?
And mind you, just saying, this. And the thing is, this affects mostly women, not men.
Of course, yeah,
all right. All right, because they talk about sleeveless blouses.
Yeah.
And spaghetti straps. They actually have that on the side.
You have to have your shoulders covered.
I don't wear spaghetti straps.
They don't like yours.
That's like going to court. That's like going to court.
And guess who makes up this policy?
The men.
No.
Who?
The women.
No.
You think the men care that you all come in? Okay, let me just be up here for the men.
We were talking about
men do not care if women decide to wear sleeveless, no sleeve. Whatever y'all want to wear, we okay with it.
But they're the ones who are enforcing it, though, a lot of times.
The women make them. It ain't the men. I tell you that. We got a text message. Good evening, team. Safety. Please note that we have a culture of shortcuts. We, as a people, do not appreciate the value of training our employees. Owners and managers always want to save money in the short term. They lose thousands or millions in the long term. We could agree with you there. I can certainly agree with you there.
Yeah.
Thank you for your text, Dexter.
I always tell people you're going to pay for safety somewhere. Either you pay for it up front or you're going to pay for it on the back end.
Oh, by the
where
way,
are you going to invest it?
By the way, listening audience, we're on until 8 o'clock tonight, by the way. So just thought I'd let you know.
And so the
that.
Numbers again, now that we mentioned that, we got to somehow the gods have shined on us and we got an extra half hour today.
Just as we said it.
Yeah. 323-6232. 325-4316 and 325-4259 and Family Island. You can join this conversation at 242-300-5720 and BTC powered text line is 422-4796. So we're going to take our final break and we'll be back right after this. Don't go anywhere. This is just a break.
Yes, we're on until 8 tonight, guys.
The all-new CBSBahamas.com is faster, smarter, and we've made it even easier to browse our inventory of over 11,000 products. Earn reward points with every online purchase. Check out our new AI-powered chat assistant, available 24/7. You can even select a date and time for items to be delivered to your house, job site, or the mailboat. Our Family Island customers are loving it. Build beautiful throughout the Bahamas with the new CBSBahamas.com.
Main purpose for a lot of customers coming in and out these doors is because of the relationship built with them. Once they're comfortable, they could relate to me better.
We don't only sell paint, we sold people.
Some customers need extra patience.
Whatever your paint or patience needs, the entire Sherwin-Williams Paints team are ready to show you some good customer service. Sherwin-Williams Bahamas. Find color in every day.
When we started Storm Frame Windows in 1999, we wanted to fabricate an impact-rated product to compete with the Florida market, and we've done this. There's no fabricator or vendor from Florida that can do what we can in the Bahamas. Because we fabricate locally and we're a local-based company, we have the capability to provide better customer service than our competitors. With all the worldwide supply chain issues, we at Storm Frame have improved our fabrication process and have invested in stock to be able to produce our orders in 4 weeks. We also keep in stock over 400 windows and doors at standard sizes for walk-in customers to purchase. Our professional sales staff is here to assist you with the complete purchase and installation. We also service and ship to the odd hours.
Thank you for your support, Bahamas.
Thank you for your support, Bahamas.
When I wake up in the morning and I take a walk outside, I see the sunshine, I see a new day, and that feeling puts a smile right on my face. I know just what to do, go to the paint place. So if you wanna paint it right the first time, go to the paint place, stop at the paint place. And if you want it to last a lifetime, go to the paint place, stop at the paint place.
Hey, y'all ever to the market?
Yeah. Yeah.
But don't rust.
Gone are the days of cracking spoils. That is a very easy to install. Fiber steel is here to stay. No more repairing a breakup wall. FRP's the new steel in town. No salty air will ever break down. Rust or corrosion, that's in the past. In the Bahamas, now we're built to last. Say goodbye to rust forever, man. Goodbye to corrosion by the ocean, man. Say goodbye to rust forever. No rust, no corrosion. Fiber steel in our future, brother, man. FRP's in our future.
For more information on FRP concrete reinforcement products, call our development today at 603-4506 or visit our Facebook and IG page at Our Development BFRP. Say goodbye to Russ forever.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Sidebar conversation, and we are back. Nailed it on Guardian 96.9 FM, and we are nailing it in the studio and off air on these sidebar conversations.
Yes,
wish you all could hear them. I'll tell you one thing, they'll cut us off.
Then I want to talk a little bit about World Day for Safety coming up next week and the theme. So the theme's a little, is, y'all may not be interested in as contractors, but the theme is house work, and it's talking about the psychosocial aspect of the working environment. And that comes down from ILO. They set a theme each year that they want people to think about. I think last year was about AI or something like
and
that.
And ILO is International Labor Organization.
Okay. So it's an international thing. And they usually look at, like I said, they remember those who have passed on. And they do a remembrance thing, but also they promote promote this. And so they have information and things that you can use to help to promote. They want people to look at this because we don't really think about that, how that affects safety, your workload, you know, your work demand, workplace issues like bullying or sexual harassment or anything like that that affects us, the psyche, you know, the psyche while you're working. Because it's hard to work safe if your mind, your mental isn't in place, right? If you're drained, if you're fatigued, if you're overworked, you know, because even in the States, you have standards around that, how much you can drive, you know, because you see accidents are attributed to, because even that, you know, off the, that was late at night, he might have been tired, you know, those kind of things. Working alone policies, all those sorts of things, how you design work. And so that's why speaking with HR also, because that's a human resource function, and you mentioned human resources, sometimes safety has to work very closely with HR. It ties in so much in how you design, even down to the job description and who's doing what, to make sure that people are safe. And
there's one other issue that I have found that is... it's very disconcerting for me, so I just won't allow it on my site. If a person does not speak English and you're trying to direct them as to how the job is to be done and all this kind of stuff, and they, and even if you say, you say it and then say, tell me what I said, and they have no idea. To me, that is that's too scary.
That's what Robert was talking about. Communication.
Right, but I mean, no, I don't mean just talking like a husband and wife don't communicate.
No,
but
no,
no,
I mean, you
language.
Can't understand the same language. And you can't comprehend and then carry out tasks. That's definitely a safety hazard.
That is, yes. That and the goggles, to me, are the two biggest ones that, that affect me, you know?
What do you think, Robert?
About
the communication, especially in Bahamas. Let's get into it. The language challenge that we have obviously a very dominant
French speaking
participants in construction.
Sorry, French speaking.
Yeah, French speaking. Broken French speaking and English speaking. So
well, what I do actually for that is I get a first generation Bahamian that speaks Creole.
Yeah,
and that way I have a free translator.
Okay,
right. You know, but.
But it could create a risk.
Communication-wise.
If something is happening, how do you let me know?
I find that is an easy problem to solve. Okay? Because you could always find a way to communicate with someone if it's just a simple language barrier. Our problem is, one of the problems we have here in the Bahamas is that when I say we don't communicate, we just don't talk to each other. We don't want to talk to each other.
No.
Whether it's because we just have... You know, we feel that we shouldn't have to speak to this person, or we have a huge ego, or it's just not something that's encouraged.
But if something is happening on a job site and you need to let everybody know, and these people do not understand the language that you're saying.
Oh, I don't disagree with you, Debbie. I'm just saying that's just not the only thing.
Yeah. That's a part of it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you.
If you're having an issue where you have people that, like you said, they can't speak the language, or even worse, they can't read the signs.
Yes.
What's the point? The sign saying, danger, do not
caution,
go there.
Yes.
And they can't understand what that's saying.
And that is why you see in industries like the airline industry and the maritime industry, you have to speak English.
Yeah.
No matter where you are in the world, you have to speak English. And that is something that needs to happen here, you know, in the Bahamas, you know, like I said, with the communication. You know, but communication leads to training.
Yeah.
And that is something that, you know, once again, I'll say something else that's not going to be very popular. We don't value education.
No. That part.
No.
We just don't. Yeah. You know, a couple of years ago, a guy died because he got electrocuted in a forklift. He raised the forks, and the forks touched the power line.
The power line.
I remember that.
Now, he was sitting in
the cab.
The cab. His feet was on rubber.
His foot was on rubber.
He was sitting on rubber. But when you got a forklift, what's the first thing you do? You grab
pull
it.
Yeah.
440 volts running through.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
But if you had taken forklift certification, you'd have known, wow, maybe I just need to sit there. Or just lower the forks because the knob is covered with rubber.
It's hard to believe that heavy equipment like things like forklifts, payloaders, excavators, cranes, and that kind of thing. Look at Jacob. Jacob was a crane operator for, what, 30-something years, right? But it's hard to believe that when you go to get your license, that you should not have to have a training program.
What license?
Don't you have to get a driver's license to have an excavator or something like that on the road?
It's just
you mean like a contractor's license?
Yeah. No.
Oh.
No.
Oh. It's just now they could buy the C-class, but then it's not specific to that equipment.
No.
It's not about the equipment. It's just that it's a heavy to the C-class, you know, that you can operate a big,
We just started CDL.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
CDL?
Commercial driver's license.
Oh, yeah.
That's
right.
What you maybe mean. Other than it's not specific
if
to
if you could buy
equipment.
A truck, a dump truck, you could be a... You contractor.
You drive, use a
I've
dump
seen
truck
videos of a guy with his 10-year-old child on a bulldozer.
Yeah. Because there's no law that says you can't. So again, he's not breaking the law because there's no law to say you can't. Except for if he's on the road where he should have a valid driver's license.
Yeah. And a license on the back of the vehicle. Shouldn't it have a license on it? Like a plate of some sort?
Many equipment on this island don't have plates. You see bobcats and things on the road plates. Because again, who's enforcing that?
The same
police.
People that are enforcing wearing your seatbelts.
The police.
Listen, I met a foreigner one time years ago, and I said, man, you know, do you enjoy living in the Bahamas? I love this place.
Absolutely.
So,
yes. You can do anything.
Anything goes.
You can do anything.
Whatever you want. And he said, you're not breaking the law because there's no law to break.
That part.
No. We have a lot of laws. We just don't have any enforcement of it.
But there is. I mean, there isn't. I mean, like, if you think about it, if someone dies on your site, what law have you broken?
You have not broken the law.
Health
and Safety at Work Act.
That is so vague.
We remember we talked.
Yeah, we talked
as far as reasonably practical.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
What in the world does that mean?
It means that if you think it's safe enough, it's safe enough.
It's reasonable.
Enough.
Yeah.
Wow.
If it's practical,
yes.
And it's reasonable for you, and that's
so
that's
practical like, means. If it's financially feasible
that's
for you,
that is
what that means.
That's what it translates to.
It means whatever you interpret it. It leaves too much room for interpretation.
Yeah.
That's
you know,
problem.
I did some scaffolding training for, I can't remember the name of this company. They're doing some work on Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. They have the most beautiful scaffolding I've ever seen in my life. Okay. They got, like, trap doors.
Oh,
yes.
Biggest thing.
Wow.
Links, everything.
You got real
this
scaffolding.
Thing was
yes.
so strong, I could run up and down this
wow.
thing.
Wow. Okay.
Okay.
That's a strong scaffold.
All right, now. Yeah. That's strong. Like, that man, whoever made Thor's hammer, they made that.
They made
you know, but now you drive by the old, what's the old Batelco building there off of?
Oh.
Alvin Drive. Off of JFK.
JFK.
Yeah, the old BBC building.
The old BBC building.
Yeah.
Still there.
You remember that scaffolding?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Left a lot to be designed.
They're almost done.
And when they were building, I can't remember the name of the building, but it was right across the road from that. I saw a guy, he was an Italian handler. The boom was fully extended, and the guy and they had a piece of plywood on the forks, and the guy is just standing
on top of that.
On top of the plywood
what?
On the forks.
On the fork, on the boom.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, see, if he falls, what law is there to say that they broke the law?
No. No.
Now, I can tell you, I can show you right here in Ocean 1910.
Right?
Where the lawyer is.
Yeah. But that's
okay?
Ocean.
But we have no law that says that you weren't supposed to do that.
Right.
But
we're saying, that there's no regulations and standards to
and
support the act.
It goes back to my original point. The Bahamas, and not us, I don't want to put us in it, the leadership of this country do not consider construction important enough to want to see the safety of the people who participate in it to be important enough, and the persons to be regulated who participate in. That's my personal view. Mm-hmm. I can only gather that because, like you said, OSHA will tell you some people can either have to go before the courts for that person dying. There's an incident that happened that they say could have been prevented. That's compared to the Bahamas. Nothing happens. No liability, no risk. You didn't even have to have insurance. Didn't have to work in court. Nothing, 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 nothing. That shows you what we're serious about. Mm-hmm. And this is like Robert was saying. We want to police you coming into the door of the probate office, But you could kill somebody with a piece of equipment, and that's not.
Or severely injure them, and you tie them up in courts for months and for years, years.
And to me, that shows you how any government, I don't care if it's the FNM or the VLB, I don't care which one it is, it shows you that they just don't care about you.
That's it.
Right. You know how OSHA started?
Mm-hmm.
In the 70s, in the garment industry in New York, there was a huge fire. Mm. A lot of people died.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Nixon created OSHA.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Right? OSHA isn't something that's been around for hundreds of years.
No.
This is the 70s.
One policymaker decided,
we got to do something.
Was it during the Hoover Dam?
No.
No?
That was in the 70s.
Okay.
Yeah.
When they had a huge fire in the garment district. I can't remember. There was a lot of people that died.
In New York. 43rd Avenue.
And the thing is, we have an OSHA too. And then let's say, we were just talking about this with another friend, and not necessarily just for safety, but it is safety until someone like either sues the government. Yeah. A lot of the environmental acts came out of suits and lawsuits, and the government now had to protect themselves. And justify why they didn't put that in place or do these things.
Now, let me ask you another question, though. Because I know we talked about it earlier on the show about that same Occupational Health and Safety Act that is very loose. Loose like a goose.
Fake.
At best. Let us, and I'm going to go deep with this.
Mm.
Do you believe that document, had it been a document by the private sector community, presented then to the government and made right and then presented, Would it been more similar to the as OSHA document?
Yes, I think private sector.
And Leonard, oh my goodness, you and Dwayne, I was on another show earlier today, and he said the exact same thing that may need to, what needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
The private sector, the professionals, the persons who have the knowledge, not the politicians, not the policymakers, but the people who actually have the knowledge of how safety works and how it's supposed to look. Do these things, draft a document, present it to the government. We had that discussion offline, but I presented it, and I'm like, this is what we need to have. You know, y'all are free to have this, and give us and use it and implement it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, there's things being drafted, and sometimes we're invited to a symposium, but we're not at the table while it's being done.
Right.
Bring us in at the tail end. But look at this and
we're
see
never
if it's
invited to the table about anything.
Right.
Ever.
Until it comes out, and then you pick up a fuss, and they'll be like, you didn't consult with us. There's no buy-in. There's no participation with the experts, right? The subject matter experts on the ground who are going to have to implement these things.
Right.
And then when it comes out, for example, like when with the insurance thing with the cars and stuff that they kind of had to backpedal on.
Mm-hmm.
Remember?
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody consulted the real people
and
the backlash that may happen and think of it. And that's the unfortunate thing. And that's all we try to ask.
But it's like
at the table, to be a part of the process. I mean, we ain't going to do it for free, because if you pay all that, you see them consultants fees and what they pay.
Yeah.
You know, we're professionals. We pay for our time. Right. We pay for our certifications. And if you're going to pay someone else, at least pay for something that's going to work for the country.
Right. You've worked on many of the
government things to the Prime Minister's office recently for the last 3 years with foreign consultants.
The thing, so we know what it takes. And I've worked in the States. I've worked in, different parts of the world. And I can see it. And the thing is, and different parts of the region too, in the Caribbean region, and what they're doing when it comes to safety. Even we're asking for that ratification of ILO for OSHA framework for the country, and we've been trying to push that, and they look like they're making headway towards doing that. Because once it's international and it's ratified, then they'll try to do something. Because the framework is there. We just have to do it.
Yeah.
Right? And implement something for the country and then the regulations and standards. Because it's not rocket science. There's templates out there.
Well,
you just have to do it.
Here's my challenge with what you're saying, Station. And I hear you're passionate about that. I get two passionate people in the room with me, too. And Debbie, you're the only calm one, so we're going to keep you calm here.
And that's never usually the case.
Right?
We're never usually calm.
Never.
Yeah.
So I think the most important thing that we recognize is that it's not for lack of knowledge, but really the question that has not been addressed by the legislation as it is right now is, what was it designed to achieve? When I read it, the very minimum outcome is what I gained. Secondly, it really wasn't designed to make the companies more responsible.
Right.
To me, when I read it, it seems like the employee have to act in a more safe way. Now, that's the opposite of how OSHA works in the United States. The company in the UK, the company job is to make the employee safe. When I read our Occupational Health and Safety Act, it is for the employee to behave on the job in a more safe manner.
Without even knowing what that probably is in most cases.
Yeah. Whatever is practically possible. Terminology to just, I continue to hear, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Practically possible. So the guy I saw who was hanging off a 20-foot ladder, holding on to the edge, roof edge, and painting, that seemed practically
reasonable.
Reasonable. Unless his hand slips and he falls to death.
Or wasn't it this summer or this spring?
It was
last
this summer.
Spring when the building of Ansbacher and they were climbing out of the gable ends in the roof and they had a ladder just on the roof.
On the roof.
Oh my God. And they had
tilted out.
No ropes, no nothing.
Then they created a scaffold viral. With ladders. It was
scaffolds coming out of the window.
Oh,
the windows. You remember the picture. Oh, you remember it.
I don't care what anybody says. That was amazing. That
was well done. It was very creative.
It was. That was
the scare the net of me, I'll tell you.
Good for them. Yeah. All right? That was wow.
Everybody lived.
Hey, man, because I don't even know how they got that. That was because those were like the 2x12s or something like that?
Yeah.
Or 4x12s? Yeah. That was fantastic, man. I did a great
job.
We
are the most creative, I'm telling you, Bohemians.
I'm doing things we should never be doing.
If I came back in life, I wouldn't want to be on anything other than a
Bohemian. Let me tell you something. Which we pass every day, and we don't appreciate the dangers in it. Mm. We see too much of it. Mm-hmm. Roadworks.
Oh, yes.
Robert, the guys who work on the road with our friends, family, and cousins, them driving past them at 900 miles an hour, got to have nerves of steel.
Mm-hmm. I don't know
because
how they do
I would not work on the road with the drivers that are on the road.
No, me
and
either.
Even as simple as painting the curb and cleaning. Oh. And
one coon.
I'm like, that's
one
it.
One coon, you may see one coon. Other than that, you see a guy, no PPE.
No safety vest.
Trying to tell you, hey, hold on, stop.
No signage.
I'm going to see not even look at the guy. It's about to turn the traffic.
It's wild out there. It is wild.
And then the motorbikes. The motorbikes drive like crazy. Anyways, in and out. And then they're doing wheelies in the middle of.
It's wild. But, we got a call. Let's take this call, Robin. Okay, call you live. Go ahead.
Once again, you people, I saw Smoggy calling back with this question.
Go ahead, Smoggy.
We not really had a serious hurricane hit New Providence from my hood. From 1929.
Don't put mouth on that, Sparky. Mm-hmm.
So you say, go ahead.
A lot of hurricanes hit other parts of the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We've built plenty government homes, plenty homes in McCullough Corner, all around mostly where the populated ghetto, we call it ghetto areas.
Mm-hmm. Inner city.
Our roofs, our inspectors, we don't know if the contractors shortcut us. We don't know what it's worth because we never had the test.
Mm.
If a hurricane like Darien comes to New Providence, the capital of the Bahamas, where the majority of the population come from better way of life and living, if the roof misdeal I got down in Prior State I got from the government, how do I know if my roof wouldn't be the first thing to go if 50 miles an hour come to Prior State?
Well, truthfully, what I would do is I would hire somebody to actually go in my roof with a flashlight, and I would have them check to make sure that all the hurricane clips are on. And if they are not on, I would hire somebody to put them
to put
on. But I definitely would have somebody go up there because you've got rafters and you've got, you know, the bracing and everything. You can get up there. And, you know, sometimes it's not a lot of roof that you have to look at. But with a good flashlight, that's exactly what I would do. Anybody, I don't care who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know, even if you bought a house from somebody, you don't know if there's hurricane clips on.
Right.
Right? That would be the first thing I would do is make sure that those are on.
And I'm glad he mentioned that because it's April. Major's right there. Hurricane season about to start again. How many, and that's part of safety too, hurricane preparedness and emergency response.
Yes.
How many businesses have hurricane response plans?
Yeah.
Or even homes. Hurricanes, check your homes and see, make sure you're ready for hurricane season. Construction industry, what do you do when a hurricane's about to start and you have all these scaffolding and things all over the place? Do you have a plan and how you're going to clean up and secure the site so they don't become projectiles and be worse? Mm-hmm. And Robert looking at me like, what are you talking about?
So,
but these are the things, the questions you have to ask. And because we live, like he said, we live in a hurricane-prone zone, right?
Showing up to the construction site in slippers, you think?
Listen, for 5 minutes left in the show, we got 5 minutes left in the show. I'm going to go around the room, including you, Debbie, and I want everyone to identify or make one suggestion on what a site, a environment, a space could do to be more safe. Let's start with you, Debbie.
The first thing, like I said before, the first thing I think that's important is to make sure that your physical body is protected, because your physical body is what has to be there to work, to do the job, and then also to go home and feed your family. So, again, if it's a vest, if you're in a high traffic area and you've got heavy equipment, make sure you've got the brightest vest on ever, right? Mm-hmm. If you are out and you're in the yard and you don't have good, you need good construction boots. You need to go to one of those places on Madeira and they sell boots and all that kind of stuff. I didn't want to say anything. Yeah. Anyway, and then goggles, for God's sakes. And they go, oh, well, it's sweaty. Then put a cloth on the top part of it and let so you don't have sweat. Use the goggles and use a hard hat, right? And if you're doing anything else, like, please, you know, if you're dealing with, like, things like muriatic acid and all that kind of stuff, God's sakes, people are actually dying from persons who are making man-made countertops out of quartz and corian and that kind of stuff. And in California, they've now done laws and they're banning certain products because of the amount of cancer and lung problems that people are having. Mm-hmm. So protect yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to end up blind and having to have somebody in your family have to walk you around. You know, it's too important.
Cutting some wood.
Yes. So for me, it's your personal body safety.
Mm-hmm. Good. Robert?
I would encourage every company to create a safety culture. Mm-hmm. You don't need the government to tell you that you need to supply a safety culture to your employees. Mm-hmm. All right? You don't need the government. Because a lot of this stuff, I always say this in my training, safety training is common sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Mm-hmm. You don't need the government to tell
That's the problem. Common sense.
It's not common.
Sorry.
But you don't need the government to tell you wear safety shoes.
No.
To wear long pants to work. To wear a safety vest. Mm-hmm. To wear gloves. To wear a hard hat.
Mm-hmm.
So all I would say is I would encourage all companies, no matter what you're doing and what industry you are, to create a culture of safety.
Like that.
Stay tuned. And piggybacking on that, and one of the ways to do that is to just talk about safety too. Mm-hmm. Get a committees together. Do your job talks in the morning, you know, your huddles and just talk about safety on the job so that it becomes a part of the culture.
And they've heard it before, so they will.
Right.
The more you talk about it.
Repetition deepens the impression. The more it's not a one-time thing. And that's what the time is. Oh, well, I said that once before. Sometimes it takes repeated reminders, you know, refreshers or whatever the case, especially if you see it slacking. So you want continuously improving, even when you do start to implement things. And just, we can't, you know, the best way to eat an elephant is one bit at a time.
Yes.
Right? Change management, because it's not going to work, you know, try to implement everything one time.
Right.
But start with a small win. You say small wins.
Right.
And like you said, and it ties it together. Small win is the PPE.
Thank you. Yes.
Right? And just start somewhere.
Right.
And do something.
Well, the final word I want to say on this is that Tuesday the 28th of April is World
Day of Safety
and Health. And so I put out the challenge to all the persons in the construction community that are listening. We're going to go around, we're going to take some photos, and we want to see everyone in PPE. I'm looking to give away some memberships in the Bahamian Contractors Association for free.
So make
sure your guys, you got a couple of guys, days to put together, go to spaces and get some PPE and put it on your guys, and we'll be looking for you. And that's the end of our show today. So we're going to thank our guests, Eustacia Jennings.
It was a great show.
Thank you, Robert Ritchie, from Bahamas Safe Solutions.
Thank you very much.
J-E-S-S.
Jess,
thank you for being consultant, for being on the show. and the Bahamas Association of Safety Professionals.
Yes.
Wonderful organization. Yes. We need more and more of these persons canvassing and promoting safety in the Bahamas.
Right.
That's our show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Faith and belief.